Everybody's talking at me. I don't hear words they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. People stopping still, I can't see their faces, only the shadows of their eyes. I'm going well, the sun keeps shining through the pouring rain. Going well, the weather suits my clothes. Banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Clothes, banking off of the northeast winds, sailing on summer breeze, and skipping over the ocean like a stone. Everybody's talking at me, can't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind. I won't let you leave my love behind. No, I won't let you leave.
Harry Nielsen, everybody's talking on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7. You're listening to The Drive Time. I'm Dave Glover. With me in the studio, Rob Washburn. And again, as I said, this is our weekly installment of Consider This. Well, where do you want to kick it off this week, Rob?
Well, let's start local, Dave.
Well, I think we should do that. So let's look at Hamilton Township because, again, you know, we have extended this invitation to the mayor several times, actually, Mayor Mark Lovshin, who, for whatever reason, I guess he thinks things are just going so well up there that he doesn't need to talk to anybody about just what's happening.
Well, he really didn't give me an answer. Part of my role, Dave, that I play for this segment is I am the producer of this particular segment, the 1 hour, and I reach out and book guests for the show. So I had reached out to Mr. Lovshin, and it turns out that he wrote me back and said, first of all, I'd asked him if he'd come and talk to us about a strategic plan. I guess the CAO earlier last month brought forward a substantive document outlining some of the objectives and goals for council to review. And of course, we had our guests only a few weeks ago, two of the representatives, Vince and John from the Citizens Council for Hamilton Township. They were down and they were talking about this strategic plan. So I thought this would be great. You know, we've heard one side. Let's hear what the mayor has to say. And so I mentioned that in my email, and he wrote me back and said that the strategic plan had been put in place 16 months ago. So maybe it was a change in terminology. I'm not sure what it was, but certainly in the local media, the CAO's report was called a strategic plan, so that was what I was referring to. Anyway, he then ended it very abruptly, saying that this time slot was no good for him in any manner, so forget it. So I'm hoping, I've extended some invitations to various counselors, and I hope that somebody will come in and talk to us, because I'd love to hear what they have to say. As good journalists, we like to get all sides and hear all voices, so the more the merrier, and I hope we can, you know, get a diversity of voices on some of the stuff that's going up in Hamilton Township, because they got a lot going on up there.
They do. And as I say, and if you as a listener would like to have Mark Lovshin come on our show, you can email him at marklovshin@kojiko.ca. And we'd love to. I'd like to see the mayor in here. We've had most of the other mayors in from the community in here.
Absolutely. And the other thing too is that one of his initiatives with the county council was the costings and talking about cost sharing measures and cost effectiveness measures.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I read in tonight's newspaper that and these initiatives are coming forward, and a report was brought forward to county council recently about this. So again, you know, it'd be great to talk to him. How does he feel about it? What is this going to mean? You know, there was some talk at one point that this was a precursor to amalgamation, but everybody wants to assure in today's story, at least, that this is not about amalgamation, but instead it's about saving money and, you know, buying in bulk, which they all like to do. And, you know, instead of one municipality ordering a dump truck, you need two or three, then let's go out and we'll buy two or three and get a better price for it.
Exactly. Yeah.
So it would be good to hear about all these things.
Well, especially in light of a communique that they put out on October 22nd, which was signed by the mayor and Arthur Anderson, the CAO. And it read, in part, "Local Government Week aims to increase youth and public awareness about the important role local government plays in our communities. And we have just wrapped up this year's week from October 16th to the 22nd. In Hamilton Township, they celebrated Local Government Week with a special day organized on October 18th at the Baltimore Arena, where they held a regular council meeting with several important community business items." But the part that gets me here, two things. One, Local Government Week is to raise public awareness about the important role that local government plays in your communities. And also the goal was to increase youth and public awareness. And through participation of the Baltimore, Camborne Public Schools and the media, we're able to reach out to a large number of a large audience of people. Thank you for your ongoing interest in local government. So with that being issued in a communique, those two important parts right there, public awareness and highlighting the important role that local government plays in communities, and also this idea of increasing awareness through participation, that seems to have gone out the window when it comes to getting the mayor on our show.
Well, you know what, Dave? I talk to my students about this all the time, and it's a really important concept in journalism, and that is that being interviewed is not a legal matter. I mean, it's not a crime for people to say, no, I don't want to be interviewed. It's a social contract. People do it out of the goodness of their heart in the mm-hmm. hope that they want to reach out and communicate. And it's one of the important roles that journalists play. So, you know, anybody's free not to come on and mm-hmm. talk to us. And there's lots of people, listen, I have all the time that say, no, I'm not interested. And that's perfectly fine. And Mr. Lovshin is well within his right to say, no, I don't want to come on. But I think in face of some of the tensions between himself and the Citizens Council and also the activities that are going on, I mean, it'd be great for him to come on to a different media other than the newspaper, and let's have a conversation. I would think is part of your job, but again, it's his choice. He's free to do what he'd like to do. However, I'll just say this. I've been making some calls today, and I will continue to do so over the next few days. I'd love to hear from any one of the counselors if they'd like to come down and talk to us. You know, he's not the only person that can speak from Hamilton Township mm-hmm. Council, and I hope that there are enough independent-minded politicians up there that feel they can come down and maybe they'll be good enough to fill us in on what's going on.
Absolutely. It would be wonderful. So, again, at this point, we're extending our invitation to Deputy Mayor Gary Woods, to Councillor Scott Gibb, Bill Kane, as well as Pat McCourt. Now, and the listeners may recall, I mean, Pat McCourt was in this studio quite a few times during the municipal election. And we afforded her many opportunities to come here and speak with regards to what her platform was, what her role as a councillor would be. And it would be refreshing, actually, if we can't get either the mayor or the deputy mayor to come on in, to perhaps get Ms. McCourt to come back into the studio.
I'm sure, given the opportunity, she'll be here. I don't doubt it for a moment.
I wish we could, because again, you know, and even at county council, because it's very difficult for us to have been able to get anybody from county from the county.
We've had Gil Brockenier has been on several yep. times and talked about county issues, and it was interesting, you know, Dave. I ran into him just earlier this week and had a lovely conversation with him in regards to the CETA trade deal,
right,
and some of his concerns around the opening up of municipal contracts to mm-hmm. foreign bidders. And, you know, some real frustration there. At least he was expressing it to me. I don't want to speak for him, but if I can share this part of the conversation, I really got a sense that he feels overwhelmed. And, you know, he and other municipal leaders have been calling hard for these portions of the agreement mm-hmm. to be removed. Because, you know, can you imagine having a Belgian contracting company come in and doing our sewers? Or having a German company run our municipal water system? Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the potential in this CETA deal.
Absolutely.
And it's very real on the front line here in Northumberland.
Well, it's on the front line across the country, too.
Absolutely.
Because of, I mean, don't forget, we got a federal government right now that's committed to massive infrastructure investment.
Yep.
How much of that infrastructure investment is now going to go to European contracts?
Absolutely.
That is a genuine concern. I mean, we look at the CCC, right?
Yep.
That was just built. Under the CETA deal, we could have had, if you will, a Belgian company come in and do the project.
It's already a sensitive topic to say some of the contractors who come into our town to do some of this work because they are not local. I mean, we're very fortunate. We do have some good local contractors, mm-hmm. Bayan and others, who do work regularly for us. And they employ local people, and that stimulates the local economy. But it's bad enough that we have, you know, some contractors coming from Markham and Toronto and Newmarket.
Mm-hmm.
And they come down here and they do work for us. And that's dollars that are going outside of this community. And I've seen some very strong debates. I'm not saying which way I would land on this one, but I've seen very passionate debates about, you know, contracts going to local people. Even the website, you know, we've got some fantastic web developers and internet service providers locally. And where did they go to get the website done? I think it was an outside firm. And that's discouraging because, you know, if you don't support local, then how do we have a good local economy?
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
And another thing that he talked about, Dave, since we're on the topic, and forgive me, I'm going to run with it, but the mayor was expressing some dismay at the provincial granting structure that is working. I don't know if you heard today, but there was some talk about all this infrastructure money, and they were down in Toronto, and of course Mayor John Tory is there and with hat in hand and wanting dollars. And, you know, the mayor expressed his concern that rural Ontario is not getting the level of funding that it needs.
Mm-hmm.
And you and I have talked many times about some of the institutions locally and the municipal government locally not getting sufficient dollars. And here we are as provincial taxpayers. Our tax dollars are going to Toronto to pay for subway systems and transit systems that we're never going to use. And I don't begrudge them, and I know they've had a great need. But, you know, they have kept their taxes artificially low for years and years and years. And this is the point that the mayor was making. Now, the rest of us are expected to pay for that. And you can't tell me there isn't a rural politician around who would have liked to have kept their taxes as low as Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you know, well, we don't want them to go up 2%, or we don't want this, or we don't want that. It's time the Toronto taxpayers started paying more of their share. And let's see some of this money coming down our way, because it's desperately, desperately needed.
Absolutely. And you know what? That's a huge point. And I've talked to Lou about this as well, because now Lou is head of the Liberal caucus at this point. He's the caucus chair.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the guy guiding the meetings. And he's had these conversations with Toronto MPs before and MPs from major urban centers, Toronto, Windsor, Hamilton, Ottawa. They're all like, well, we have the most people, so we should get the most bang for the buck. But the reality is, you know, the rest of the province is getting shortchanged. They definitely are.
Well, and what's the alternative? You know? Are we all supposed to move to Toronto so we get decent services?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, are we all supposed to move to Peterborough, or are we all supposed to go to Ottawa?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're here. We're you know, we have a viable economy that we're trying to maintain. How are we supposed to do that if all of our institutions and our municipalities are not being properly funded? And, you know, I think it's just about a matter of equity. But, you know, I know some programs support some of the more distant or farther away areas in the north.
Mm-hmm.
I think Eastern Ontario especially could certainly use better funding. But we'll have to see.
I think everybody's looking for better funding. That's the problem. And I think there really needs to be a rethink on the part of the provincial government in terms of how they distribute the, if you will, the wealth across all of the municipalities of Ontario. The Association of Municipalities of Ontario definitely has a huge uphill battle on their hands. And also one other aspect of that, of course, is that Toronto is no longer part of the Association of Municipalities of Ontario, right? Toronto has its own sort of its own entity, its own element.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then, you know, there needs to be a rethink, definitely.
Well, Dave, what do you think since we're talking about this, what about Mr. Moreau's statement yesterday in regards to this infrastructure funding program that they want to introduce?
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious what your thoughts are on that, because I know you have some very strong feelings around how infrastructure funding takes place.
Well, and I said it on the show yesterday, and I guess I'll repeat myself. The reality is Canada already has an infrastructure bank. It's called the Bank of Canada. And for more than 40 years, it provided all of the funds necessary to build our highways, to build our bridges, to build a railway, to put in water infrastructure, to build our hydro facilities, to build every aspect of the Canadian lifestyle that we've grown accustomed to loving, including our public health care, our public education, post-secondary and secondary. And now we have a federal government who, with the stroke of a pen, this is the thing that drives me the craziest of all. It would only take the stroke of a pen. And they wouldn't even have to go to Parliament to do this. All they would have to do is take that, you know, that redacted pen that they use to black out portions of documents that are released to the public, and just take out Section 18M of the Bank of Canada Act and restore the role of the Bank of Canada to finance our infrastructure and to finance the progressive policies of this country. We can tell the Bank of International Settlement that we no longer want to be an agent. But they don't want to do that. They want to set up an entirely separate thing called the Infrastructure Bank of Canada, which will be funded through the Bank of International Settlement, just like every other process. And I hate to do this, but I want to remind the newly elected Liberal government that we already have this infrastructure. And that 40 years ago, the current Prime Minister's father brought in this provision within the Bank of Canada Act, and started us down this really nasty road of borrowing money from international banks and for watching the interest on our debt just balloon to the point where it's really not even affordable to pay. So I think part of the resolution and the solution, if you will, to this problem with regards to infrastructure funding is to utilize the Bank of Canada for the role it was enacted. And let's face it, there's already legal challenges to this. The Comer's case before the Supreme Court of Canada, Rocco Galati and the group that he represents, he's actually just implemented a new piece of a new lawsuit this week. Did you hear that?
No, I didn't.
Rocco Galati and representatives, two members from the Comer legal action, as well as other representatives from other stakeholders in this country, have filed a lawsuit in federal court on Monday of this week to block the CETA deal, because of course it impacts on the sovereign rights of our legislators to govern the Canadian people.
Well, Dave, I'm really glad you repeated your position from yesterday, because I did hear you say that, and I wanted you to say that because I wanted to talk to you some more about this, because when I heard this, I started to begin to wonder, why do we need to be turning to private investors? And why are private investors so anxious to suddenly put money into infrastructure projects? And of course, as an investor, there's an expectation of a return on investment.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I look at the situation and I would say, what's wrong with actually taxing these companies and these investors and getting taxes where we don't have to pay it back? Mm-hmm. If we had a tax system that was more equitable, where we weren't always putting the burden on the middle class and the lower classes, and a system that didn't allow corporations to have all these write-offs that they so often take advantage of and end up not paying taxes, and let them pay their fair share, maybe we wouldn't have to be going out and getting private investors.
No, you're right.
Where we have to be backed into a corner where suddenly, you know, they get to pick what are the infrastructure projects that they want to support. Mm-hmm. And that, again, takes away, as you were talking about earlier, it takes away our sovereign right as a government to say, this is in the public interest. And what if OMERS doesn't want to fund a new sewer system in Coburg? They don't want to be bothered. Oh, we want some high-profile investment to be made. Well, would that possibly happen?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure the Liberal government would be quick to say, oh, no, that won't happen. But how can you guarantee that won't happen, at least behind the scenes?
Well, once they've opened the door to the possibility, people will go through it. You know, there's a myth out there in neoliberal ideology that this, I remember the three P's, we hear about it, private, public,
yep,
partnerships.
I do.
Well, there's no partnership there. That's a sell-off. You know, when they say, oh, no, we're using private money to, the private money are looking for the same thing they always look for, return on investment for their investors. It's as simple as that. They don't give a damn about the public good. That's not in their wheelhouse. That's, frankly, they are not even obliged to honor that within their wheelhouse, because according to Supreme Court Ford versus Dodge, the responsibility of the corporation is to their shareholders, period, full stop. Not to anyone else, not to any social justice issues, not to any issues that pertain to anything beyond what's in the best interest for the shareholders.
But Dave, on top of that is this whole notion of how infrastructure funding works. The ideal is that when we go out and we start building these new roads and arenas and water plants, et cetera, that it creates jobs and stimulates the economy, and then that in turn creates more taxes, and then mm-hmm. the government gets that money back. And that would be the money that would be going to these investors. But we've seen for how many years now, 8-10 years, that infrastructure money gets spent in incredible sums, and we still have a weak economy. Mm-hmm. So what happens if we get to the day when we're supposed to be paying these investors back, and we don't have that money? It doesn't stimulate the economy as we had hoped.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be on hook for billions and billions of dollars.
Well, as we are.
With interest. And so, you know, do we really win in the big picture? It sounds so sketchy to me. I hope we can hear more and we can get some assurances. But, you know, from my standpoint, I just like to see more equity in the system. I mean, we know there are corporations out there sitting on billions and billions of dollars mm-hmm. in reserve accounts that they choose not to spend. Yep. And
because, you know, they don't want to be taxed.
That's it. And so, I don't know, it seems like a bad deal, but maybe I'm
wrong.
Well,
it does. And I'm reminded of Sheila Fraser, the fantastic auditor general that we had in this country, who coined a phrase, value for dollar. And that phrase has stuck with me for 20 plus years. I mean, the reality is we are not getting value for dollar. Someone else is gaining from this. But we as a people, in terms of public infrastructure, are not getting value for the dollar. We're actually getting shortchanged. We'll be back with more of our conversation. We'll take a break. When we come back, more of Consider This Live right here on Trinity Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7, heard every Wednesday night in this hour.
Hi there, I'm JP Phantom, host of the Phantom Jukebox, where we salute the great songs of the 50s and 60s. But we just don't play the hits, also the flip sides and the gems that never got on radio. They're the ones we like to call the songs you should have heard. This show's goal is to take you back to a time in your life when it was fun to listen to radio. So if you're tired of the same old loop of songs, then you've dialed the right number, Northumberland 89.7 FM. Please join us every Saturday night, 6 to 7, on the Phantom Jukebox, here only on Northumberland 89.7 FM. An enjoyable stroll down memory lane.
ToyCon comes to Coburg November 6th at the Coburg Community Center and is Coburg's best collectibles event. See the DeLorean Time Machine from Back to the Future and shop 80 plus tables of comics, action figures, toys, video games, and so much more. Admission just $5 with kids under 10 free. Coburg ToyCon, Sunday, November 6th at the Coburg Community Center, presented by the Quinty ToyCon team. More information at quintytoycon.ca.
And look for the Northumberland 89.7 booth at ToyCon.
It gets people from here to here, or here, and even here. All because when they were here, they heard about your business. Because in just 30 seconds, you've told a compelling story and made an emotional connection with someone that's made them go from,
huh?
To,
ah.
Now they're back here, on their way to do some
radio advertising, connecting businesses with people wherever they are.
We're the radio station that's all about Northumberland. Listen every day for local news, interviews with local newsmakers, music by local artists, and so much more. We are Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Welcome back. Now, we've been talking see, this is why I call our show Holistic Political Chat, because we started at one place. We started talking about the municipal governments. We started by, and I was doing it, and I'm going to admit it, we started off by trying to shame Mark Lovshin into coming onto the show, and I'm sure that probably has backfired. And Mr. Mayor, again, nothing personal, as we say, but we do feel as though we would like to have you into the studio. So we start with that, and we wend our way through that, and now we're talking about the Infrastructure Bank. We're talking about private-public partnerships. One thing that came out from the announcement is the specter now that they're going to start selling off public assets, like airports, for instance. They want to privatize airports in this country. And I thought to myself, I thought only Jim Flaherty did things like that. But no, it's not Jim Flaherty. Maybe it's the ghost of Jim Flaherty that hovers around the finance minister's office that says, sell the public stuff, sell the public stuff. And again, you know, like when Jim Flaherty sold the 407, it was great to balance that budget that one year. But deficits, of course, have existed ever since. And as a result, and those of us who've ever taken the 407 are not satisfied with what they're doing up there. The fact that that money is going right out of the country is another problem. Again, that's your private-public partnership, right? And so we know in Ontario, at least, I don't know, maybe they haven't felt the same sting as we have. But, I mean, I know they're trying to privatize the airports in British Columbia as well with Christy Clark's Conservative Liberal Party.
Well, I don't see how having a fire sale is supposed to be the role of government. It's supposed to be the provision of public services. And I know that we can't afford everything, but there's lots and lots out there that isn't going to upset and distort the system. I'm not convinced at all, and I know that there are many studies out there that say, you know, these ideas that business can run things better than government is a myth.
Well, they haven't been able to prove that, have they?
No, they haven't. And I mean, you've given some really fine examples, but it just makes you wonder. I think, you know, we've got a wolf in sheep's clothing up there in Ottawa if the Liberals are starting to act this way. I mean, the urgency with which they've gone after the CETA deal, this recent economic announcement yesterday. Mm-hmm. If you watch CPAC really carefully, Dave, mm-hmm. you can see the little flecks of blue under their suits.
It's true. No, it is very, very true. And, I mean, here's some of the highlights, okay, from his last update. This was from the finance minister's economic
statement.
This
is yesterday, right?
This is from yesterday, exactly.
Yep.
So a couple of things. The deficit for 2016-17 is expected to be $25.1 billion, but that doesn't include the rainy day contingency fund. In last spring's budget, the government projected $29.4 billion in deficit, and that number included $6 billion in reserve, okay? So there's still actually some positive movement there from the parliamentary budget officer's position. The deficit's gradually expected to shrink over the coming 5 years to $14.6 billion by 2021 and 2022, and that's not including any provisions set aside for a rainy day. Again, that's not in the rainy day fund. They're not counting that money. They are counting the employment insurance surplus, though, which I still believe is just theft from the unemployed. Over 5 years, the government will add a total of $31.8 billion more to deficits than was expected in the last budget, mostly because of changes to expectations for the economy. Again, they don't feel as though the economy's growing as quickly as it could, and we'll talk about that in a second. The debt burden, the size of the federal debt as percentage of GDP, will slowly rise to 30.4% from 30.4 to 31.8 by 2016-17. The government says they're going to set up this infrastructure bank that I spoke about. And, of course, we know, I've made no bones about how I feel on that one. The government wants to adopt a global skills strategy that will speed up work permits and visas for foreign workers. So, again, what they're going to do is they're going to try and find workers to fill skilled spots that we, for whatever reason, don't have the ability to fill here domestically. They're going to create a new Invest in Canada hub to attract foreign investors. And, of course, that's going to mean more sweet deals for foreign investors. Also, revising the national security rules and moving a threshold for reviewing foreign takeovers to $1 billion starting in 2017, which is two years ahead of their schedule. The parliamentary budget officer will become accountable only to Parliament, with all privileges that entails, rather than the Library of Parliament, which I think is a good move. The chief statistician will be granted more independence, which they should have, and the House of Commons Board of Internal Economy, which adjudicates disputes, sets office budgets and policies and expenses, will conduct its business publicly for the very first time. So interesting, good news, some of the things that are good there, but the overwhelming majority of that is let's face it, this is a puff piece.
Well, Dave, I got to tell you, let's take some more examples of how these liberals are suddenly changing their color. We remember the recent discussions around healthcare funding, which was just a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And, you know, you and I sat with Kim Rudd, our MP, when she was campaigning, and she was very clear when we talked about the hospital that she would do everything in her power to ensure, to work with the hospital to make sure that it was remained viable and financially strong.
Mm-hmm.
And then her own government turns around and says, no, we're going to, I mean, it was like a page right out of Stephen Harper's book. You know, no, we're not going to fund it. We got to find other ways. Here we're going to target funding for mental health services and for
home care.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's fine. And sure, we could certainly use some funding for that. But that doesn't help our hospital. And so, you know, I'm curious to see, you know, maybe I'm missing something, but I hope that Kim's going to step up and say, you know, here's what's going to happen or here's what I'm doing to help Northumberland Hills Hospital. Because, you know, this is a serious situation we have here with our local health care.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we are desperately underfunded. We talked about this earlier. This is one of those institutions that is incredibly underfunded because we are in a rural area. It's not a regional health center.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we're literally raising $12 million for equipment. I understand, I remember that interview, they need $20 million for new equipment. And they can only raise a portion of it because it's so much. And mm-hmm. we pay for all our equipment. So, I mean, you know, what's going on with these liberals? I don't know. What do you think?
Well, again, it's this patriarchal mentality of Ottawa. And I think really what it comes down to is they don't want to give up the money. You know, it's I'm going to throw this out to a lot of bureaucrats will probably be mad at me with this. But it's the mentality that it's their money. It's their money. And if the provinces want it, they have to justify why they want it. The federal government wants it. And this is for every program out there. There's all these strings that are attached, you know. But, you know, where was the debate and discussion when Ottawa decided to remove, you know, $11 billion from health transfers for the province of Ontario back in the 1990s?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, the federal government created this problem by shortchanging health care. And no one has bothered to do anything about it. Stephen Harper touted this great deal that he managed to keep going while he was the prime minister. But that was the deal that was negotiated in the dying weeks and days of mm-hmm. the Liberal Paul Martin's government. So even that wasn't enough. And I think Paul Martin realized that, too, when he became the leader of the Liberal Party, when he realized just how much the austerity of the 1990s has actually really handcuffed, if you will, and shortchanged provincial and municipal governments. And, you know, we've been discussing this in this country now for about 20 years about the role of municipalities and what is the role of a municipality in our confederation. And, you know, under the British North American Act, under our constitution, the role and responsibilities of municipal governments, realistically, they have no more power under our confederation and our constitution than the local owner of a pub. I mean, that's a reality. A pub owner in this country has the same rights and privileges as the mayor of a municipality. That's when it comes to accessing tax dollars.
But my point is that, you know, we voted a government into power just over a year ago that gave us an expectation that they were going to do business differently in mm-hmm. Ottawa.
Yep.
And, you know, we've had an interesting year where the prime minister has rode very highly in the polls in terms of favorability and likability. And, you know, great that he walks around with his shirt off 9/10 of the time. No, I shouldn't say that. But, I mean, he's got, you know, he certainly knows how to draw attention to himself and to make it positive.
Mm-hmm.
And now that we're starting to get down where the rubber's starting to meet the road on democratic reform, on funding of health care, on mm-hmm. funding of infrastructure, you know, I mean, in the last 6 weeks, we have had more disappointments than we've had in the last 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
So is this a precursor to the future that we're going to enjoy with the Liberal Party till the next election? What do you
think,
Dave?
Well, that's a good question, because I wonder how much of that is a result of the huge economic holes that were left by not only the last federal government, but let's face it, you know, we are still digging ourselves out of the hole that was left by the Kretschmann regime during. And again, I go back to the decade of austerity. I mean, he was in power for what, 13 years, I think, Kretschmann?
Mm-hmm.
And under that time, what did we see? The very first thing he did, I mean, the very first time that we saw government utilize the quote unquote surplus in employment insurance to pay down debt was under Kretschmann's regime. and under Paul Martin's stewardship as the finance minister. So a lot of what we're looking at, and I know the Liberals hate it when I do this because they don't want you to be talking about this stuff. Everyone likes to blame the previous Conservative government, but you got to remember the mess that was left, the economic hole that was left. And again, you know, I'm going to refer back to what Michael Chong said today about reducing corporate taxes and reducing taxes and then bringing in a corporate tax to lift us up out of the hole that will be left by reducing those both tax burdens. That's what the government said when they brought in the GST. That was their excuse for the GST. Oh, well, you know, we're going to reduce taxes, but we're going to do this so a consumption tax, which affects everyone equally across the board, which we know is not true. I mean, let's face it, the consumption tax that we have in this country disproportionately affects people who earn $50,000 a year or less. Because the bottom line is, I mean, let's face it, even if you're a renter, all right, you're probably spending close to 20 grand a year on your rent, okay? You're probably spending at least that much on food, okay, and other ancillary expenses. Maybe you want to buy your kids some clothes for school every year. That's nice. So there you go. So there's more than $40,000 of your income gone just on basic living expenses, which means that the bulk, 80% of what you earn goes right back into the economy. And yet for people who are earning $50,000 a year or more, they are disproportionately affected by these user fees.
Well, here's the part that I think becomes most dangerous, and that is that as the public watches this, you become more and more cynical about politicians mm-hmm. because nobody's coming up with different solutions or doing things that are really different. And that then creates a perception that why do we even bother to vote?
Mm-hmm.
And then they become dissatisfied. And if you look south of the border right now, that is a hyper example of where that disillusionment leads.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you do is you look at people that are already in government and you go, you know, there's nothing that they're going to do different. You look at somebody who comes in from the outside and suddenly, you know, we're wondering why is Donald Trump so popular? Well, he's popular because everybody's so fed up that nothing has changed. And, mm-hmm. you know, we voted in a government that said it was going to do business differently. And sure, they've done some cosmetic things with the Senate and with women represented in the legislature and on cabinet and all that good stuff. But the policies economically and the policies across the board, they're starting to come off the track, mm-hmm. and we're going back to what we saw before the election.
Well, and really all, I mean, what do Canadians want? They want honesty. That's really what they're looking for, and we're not getting that. I mean, I'm still waiting for the Prime Minister of Canada, of any party, to come to the Canadian people and say, look, this is what we need every year. I mean, you know, it takes this much money just to run the programs that we're running right now. That's how much money we need to bring in, okay? And right now, we're only bringing in this much. You know, I want a prime minister that's going to be frank and honest with us. You know, when I go to my boss for a raise, for instance, and my boss says to me, well, we can't afford to give it to you. You know, that's, for me, that's a pretty lame, well, we just can't afford it. But if my boss was to say to me, say, look, you know what? If I give you this, then, you know, I've got to cover these expenses and that expensive. When I increase your raise by this, then, of course, my payroll deductions go up as well. You know, I mean, right now, I can afford that, but I can't really afford to increase. I mean, what you want is full disclosure as a voter, right? I mean, we are the taxpayers. We're the ones who are providing the money. It would sure be nice to know if, A, we're bringing in enough money. Maybe the government's just not bringing in enough money. And if that's the case, then we need to find out where they need to bring in the money. And where is the lost money? As you mentioned earlier, we got multinational corporations. We've got Canadian corporations that earn lots of money every single year. But thanks to the wonderful work of the magicians at their accounting offices, come away with not paying anything or paying very little in taxes while they receive massive subsidies from the federal government. I mean, why are we giving companies subsidies, for instance, the oil and gas sector, when they're reporting losses? Why are we subsidizing companies that aren't making money?
And why are certain people in certain tax brackets allowed to take accounts offshore and, and move their money and not pay tax for that?
Mm-hmm.
I would also take it one step further, and I would say to you, you know, one of the reasons I think in the United States that the election has been about character and not about issues
mm-hmm.
is because that nobody has solutions around the issues. And yes, there are things that go back and forth, but people are so entrenched in the states around certain ideologies and certain positions that nothing can move. And slowly, I think in Canada, we're getting to the same place where, you know, nobody really does have a solution. Or when they do, it's so ideologically driven and we're so polarized that we can't move forward. And I would hate to see Canada go down that same path.
I would as well. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more of our conversation right here on Consider This Live, heard Wednesdays on Truly Local Radio, Northumberland 89.7.
Have you ever had a spirit lock your car doors or roll down your windows? Have you ever been a personal shopper for the dead? I have. Psychic medium Linda Willett here. Join me live starting Tuesday, November 8th from 10 to 11 a.m. for Mind of a Medium, the radio show. I'll take your questions, share some stories from my life as a medium, and hopefully bring you a little closer to those you've loved and lost. You can call me at 905-372-2321 or find me on Facebook. Join me the first and third Tuesday of every month for Mind of a Medium on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.
Hi, this is Lane with What's Happening This Week. Thursday night, the Kooks at the Cat and Fiddle at 7 p.m. Everyone welcome. On Walton Street in Port Hope at the St. Paul's Presbyterian Church, there's a free choral program for ages 6 to 12, running from 4 to 5 p.m. For info, call Audrey at 905-885-5146. All week until Saturday, take a free class at the Port Hope Rec Center. Friday, seniors badminton 55 plus at the CCC on Darcy Street from 9:30 till 11:30. All equipment supplied. Call 905-372-7371. Friday at Farmer Save, they're having a Christmas open house from 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. Saturday, the Holly Berry Christmas Bazaar at St. Mark's Church on King Street from 11 till 2 p.m. Come in at 10:30 for tasting samples. Saturday at the Northumberland Mall, a Family Wellness Day Expo from 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. In Centerton, the 9th Annual Christmas Arts and Crafts Show at the Centerton Hall from 10 a.m. till 3 p.m. If you have an event coming up, you can contact us at northumberland897.ca. This is Lane, What's Happening This Week.
Deep within the Northumberland Forest, there is a secret created by the spring-fed wells of Mill Valley and bottled by Oak Ridge Springs. Mill Valley is sodium-free and rich in naturally occurring electrolytes and perfectly balanced pH. Visit Oak Ridge Springs at 6191 County Road 45 for water in various sizes. They also carry cases and ice. You can reach them at 289-251-5579. Water, the way nature intended.
Tune in to Modern Jazz Today, a weekly radio show that focuses on today's jazz improvisers and creators, cutting their teeth and cutting the edge of sound. Join us as we explore what's new, what's groundbreaking, and where it's happening. Sunday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Northumberland 89.7, Truly Local Radio.
Do you like radio broadcasting and want to learn more? Volunteer with us at Northumberland 89.7.
And welcome back to the Drive Time, everybody. Yeah, so we've basically been sitting here complaining because
we're not complaining.
I think we
are. We're not complaining. We're talking.
We're having
a good discussion. It's a good discussion. We'd love to hear somebody phone in.
I think it's a great discussion. If you, we got 10 minutes left. If you'd like to give us a call at 905-372-2321 or 905-372-2391, you'd like to make a comment on anything we have talked about during today's broadcast. The one thing we have avoided for the most part is talking about what I refer to as Dumpster Fire 2016, the U.S. presidential election, which takes place next Tuesday. We are literally a week away from being confused as to who won the election. I don't think it's going to be any clarity there. The recent polls, let's look at some of these polls. I mean, Hillary Clinton is leading in some states by 3 or 4%, Donald Trump by 3 or 4%. I mean, what we're looking at right now in the United States in terms of electoral college is a statistical tie. We really are. We're looking at a situation where, you know, Hillary Clinton's got 44.6, Donald Trump's got 42.8. That is within the margin of error.
Okay. So a really good thing to explain at this point is what does it mean? What does a statistical tie mean? And when you talk about the margin of error, what we're talking about is that if you took the same sample, a random sample, interviewed the same people, there would be a difference of a certain percentage. And it depends on the size of the sample that you do and the manner in which you do the questions. Mm-hmm. So that margin of error allows them to do things with a certain level of certainty. So to say that something has a 2 or 3 point margin of error then means that is why you can say this is a statistical tie, even though we've seen polls with Clinton ahead 4 points, Clinton ahead 3 points. I saw CNN just about an hour or so ago. It was a four-point difference. BBC about 2 hours ago was a 3-point difference. I don't know, Dave, if you follow 538.com.
Yep.
They do a lot of statistical stuff, and it was a 3-point difference. But I guess the thing that's shocking is only 2 weeks ago, Clinton was up by 7 points.
Well, what's even more shocking is that Clinton, I mean, let's face it, why isn't Clinton ahead by 15 or 20 points? I mean, what is it about the U.S. election that allows a situation like this? And you know what? I'm going to call it out like it is. And I mentioned it earlier today because the Republicans love to talk about the elites. They talk about, you know, Donald Trump says, Hillary Clinton, you had 30 years to do something. First of all, Hillary Clinton was only ever elected to any one term and only one term as a senator for New York. And that was during Obama's administration. So she has not had 30 years to do anything. Sure, she was the wife of the president. That and a $1.50 will get her a coffee somewhere. I mean, she wasn't even allowed to do the role that he brought her into do when he made her the health czar, if you will. Donald Trump is an elite. You know, the GOP love to talk about the elites. The conservatives in Canada love to talk about the elites. But what is an elite?
But
an elite is somebody, in my opinion, who's had their entire life spoon-fed to them, who was born into wealth, or maybe they acquired wealth through their connections over years. They've managed to wangle their way to some form of authority or not, where they now can maintain the righteous high ground. Donald Trump is an elite, okay? This guy has had everything handed to him. Hillary Clinton, by definition, has become an elite.
Well, I think there's two phenomena going on here, and I'm not an expert, but these are two things that have sort of occurred to me. One is it an indication of the fragility of the support to either one of these candidates? In other words, how can you be 7 points ahead at one point, and then all of a sudden something that is really not that revelationary in its nature? I mean, this email scandal has been going on for a long time. There's nothing incredibly new or incredibly damning about this, but you know, why is it that it can have such a huge impact? Why is the electorate so edgy that this is going to drive somebody down by 7 points? So that was one thing. The second thing was I wonder, you hear campaign strategists talk about the firming up of the vote. Mm-hmm. But as you get closer and closer to election day, people start to make their final decision about, okay, here's where I'm going to vote. And I'm wondering if these tight numbers are reflecting what before was just a number of independents or people who hadn't quite made up their mind are now saying, okay, I'm going to vote this way, or maybe I'm not going to vote. I don't mm-hmm. know. But I wonder if that's a result of it more than an email scandal. It's not even a scandal. I mean, this email.
Well, it is actually a scandal. But it is a very real scandal. I mean, the one problem that Americans are facing right now, and this is the same up from both parties, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump is under investigation for various nefarious criminal activities, seriously criminal activities, the pedophilia accusations that have been coming out, the possibility that he's in fact going to be charged with having sex with a minor. That's a huge problem. The fact that these emails are coming out, the fact that the information obtained on Anthony Weiner's laptop, which was shared with his wife, information that he, because he had no government clearance, had no right to even have access to, he was able to access because that information was removed from government control by Hillary Clinton. Again, so now we have basically both parties where we should be looking at who their vice president is. You know, because what we're looking at is the possibility of either Mike Pence or Tim Kaine becoming the president of the United States, because both of these candidates face the very real possibility of impeachment. Both of them. This is the first time in American history where that's actually a reality. That is a reality.
But I think the thing that you've got to emphasize, Dave, and I know when you talk, you talk with great passion, but it's got to be key that all of this are allegations.
Absolutely.
And
unproven
allegations. And mm-hmm. we have to be so careful when we talk about this mm-hmm. because I think this is part of the lexicon that's going on that is not being adhered to, and that is what is the truth in all this? You know, we speculate. Please, somebody, give us the truth. I mean, Daniel Dale, the Toronto Star reporter, has done an incredible job fact-checking all of Trump's statements and Clinton's statements. And the New York Times has done this, Washington Post, a lot of media outlets, NPR.
Oh, they've been
fantastic,
all over.
Fantastic, getting to the truth of stuff. So the thing that's really distracting, though, is that it's all about character. It's not about policy.
Right. Nothing about policy.
And I mean, how we've got down here, there's a lot of explanations how we got down this road. But I think if you go back to these polls, I think I really wonder if it's just, you know, the plane starting to land and everybody's, you know, making their decisions now. Who are we going to vote for? What's going to happen? But I'm with you. I was talking to a colleague the other day who's a political junkie, and I said to him, I wouldn't be surprised if we go into December and we're still talking about the election results and having a sense that it's not resolved.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, when you look at the history of the only president to ever actually be impeached in the U.S., I mean, forced to leave office impeached, Richard Nixon.
Yep.
Richard Nixon was forced to resign, not because of the break-ins. Mm-hmm. Not because of who was paying for the break-ins, but for the fact that he knew about the break-ins and chose to cover it up. This is the issue. I mean, with Hillary Clinton, I mean, whether or not you agree that the emails are a problem, I mean, if you read them, you will realize that some of them are. But the real issue isn't that they were a problem. The real issue is that she lied. She testified before Congress that none of what's been proven, and this has been proven, not just allegations, but proven now, that she and Barack Obama had communications with regards to her emails. That is proven now. That is actually available. You can get that. So what she's guilty of is doing exactly the same thing that Richard Nixon was found guilty of, which is a cover-up. You know, so that is something that's going to stick with her. Whether the emails are a problem or not, the reality is she lied about it.
But
she committed perjury before the Senate.
But Dave, the one thing that's so noticeable about this election is that nobody seems to care that anybody is lying. Telling the truth has become such a rare commodity. Nobody seems to care. So it's been normalized. And that's the difference between Nixon's era and now. And that's why you're not seeing the same types of actions.
Okay, but one of the things that also happened under Nixon was Nixon's Republicans didn't have control of the House. If the GOP wins control of the House, unlike the Department of Justice, unlike the FBI, where they've got to make sure they've got all their I's dotted and T's crossed before they go public, the Senate doesn't have to do that. If they called a Senate Judiciary Committee hearing on impeachment, you can guarantee that the GOP would vote for impeachment.
I don't think anybody in the public realm is going to care, because we're all so accustomed to listening to people who repeat lies enough times that we start saying, oh, well, that must be the truth. So I think that is more to the heart of it. There's a great CBC Ideas podcast that just came out about American fascism. I recommend it highly to a lot of people. I think every voter in the United States and all Canadians should listen to it, because it is super well done. Some fabulous journalism, some great interviews with some incredibly intelligent scholars and commentators. It's called American Fascism, and it just brilliantly done and very, very insightful about the things we're talking about right now, Dave.
Absolutely. Well, and something that we don't have the time to talk about now, because we are actually going over time, sorry to the boys and girls at Cedar Rail, but something you and I should talk about next week is this idea of what's happening with journalists in this country. Three more journalists have now come forward to say that the Quebec police force has been spying on them. Three more journalists. And, you know, we know what's going on in Turkey with journalists. More than 150 journalists have been rounded up over there. Serena Shim, of course, murdered for doing her job. Listeners, there is a war on journalists in this
Love to do
world.
That, Dave.
So we'll talk
Look
about
forward
that.
To it.
Here are Cedar Rail, folks. Thanks for listening. You've been listening to The Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat. My guest, Rob Washburn, for a weekly installment of Consider This.
Northumberland 89.7 is CFWN, truly local radio, serving Northumberland County, a not-for-profit volunteer community radio station.